BDNG podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I am the Education Development Lead for the BDNG. I hope you enjoy listening to the BDNG podcast and find them beneficial to your practice. These podcasts are sponsored by Amaril. Amaril has no influence over the content of these podcasts. Happy listening.
Good afternoon, everyone. So I'm Molly and I have a guest with me today, Professor Richard Weller, who's going to talk to us about his recent research that he's done. Professor Weller, could you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so Molly, thanks. And please call me Richard. So Richard Weller, I'm an academic dermatologist at the University of Edinburgh. I've been here for an awfully long time. I mean, 27 years on and off. As a trainee and then a consultant and then a professor. And my big interest really is on the effect of sunlight on overall health, not just skin. So that probably differentiates me from most dermatologists who are really only interested in the skin. And I see patients 2 days a week, fortunately with Molly when I'm lucky. And I do research 3 days a week. So that's where I am.
And you're talking a little bit about your research. You've recently done some research. Can you tell us a little bit about this research that you've done?
Sure. Well, so we published a paper about 6 weeks ago, and really it kind of flows on from what I've been doing over the years. And we are interested in the effects of sunlight on overall health. Does sunlight make you live longer or shorter? Because as a dermatologist, as Molly keeps reminding me, sunlight is can be bad for you. It's a risk factor for skin cancer and skin aging. And that's very much what dermatologists talk about. But my real interest is in, but hang on, what does it do to all the other illnesses we have and overall health? And there's quite a lot that's led me up here to this point. But the study we've most recently published is we looked at the UK Biobank. So this was a big prospective forward-looking cohort study that was set up about 10 or 15 years ago, and they recruited 500,000 people. I was one of them. And kind of middle-aged people recruited and asked a mass of questions about health things, behavior, lifestyle, occupation, previous health, you know, a huge number of questions. I mean, it took 3 years to recruit these 500,000 people. The UK Biobank teams doing that went round Britain to different centres. And as I recall, I was there for about 3 hours having all sorts of questions recorded.
Very intensive questions.
Really intensive and measurements taking. And of course, what they then do is they have followed those people up since then to see what illnesses they get, what they die of, what cancers they get, you know, all of those factors. And the reason we can do it so effectively here in Britain, as can Scandinavian countries, is because we have a universal health system for everybody. So everybody pretty much goes into the same health system, unified death records, unified cancer records. So all of that data goes to one place. Now, that's not possible in places like America, for instance, where they've got a very disjointed health service and you can't get all of that data so readily. And our interest was in what are the effects of sunlight on death from any cause? Because my work previously has suggested that sunlight's got benefits on heart disease because it releases this stuff called nitric oxide from the skin into the circulation where it lowers blood pressure. And high blood pressure is a problem because it leads to strokes and heart attacks. So our previous work has suggested that sunlight might reduce blood pressure and thus heart disease. But at the same time, I'm a dermatologist, and I know that sunlight's a risk factor for skin cancer. So you've got a good side and a bad side. So how do these balance out? Is the good more important, or is the bad more important? And more particularly for us is, you know, what's the story in the UK? Because the sunlight advice we have in Britain is amazingly copied from that in Australia. I mean, that to me is utterly nutty. Australia is far sunnier than us. So, but what about here in Britain? So what we did was we went back and we looked at 300,000 people from the biobank, basically the people in whom there were complete records. And of course, we don't have a really good, perfect measure of sunlight exposure. Nobody was wearing a UV monitor on their foreheads 24 hours a day for 10 years. So we didn't, that would be ideal, but we don't have that. But from the questionnaires, you try and work out how much sunlight people had. And there were two questions in particular we concentrated on, which would give us an indicator of how much sunlight we had. The first one was what we'll call a behavioral one, behaviors that give you more sunlight. We asked if people use sunbeds or not. Shocked, drawing in a breath from dermatologists all around Britain. Now, the interest wasn't really so much because they're using sunbeds as because we know that people who use sunbeds sunbathe more. We know it's a kind of marker for people who like getting out in the sun more. So we've called it an indicator of sun-seeking behavior. You know, sunbed users, we call them sunseekers. So that was our first measure of people that get sunlight. Our second measure was entirely different. It's how far south you live in Britain, because the further south you live, the more sunlight there is.
Now, Scotland, there's not much sunlight.
And Scotland, there's very little indeed. I mean, we'll come back to that. Scotland has hardly any sunlight. So why we copy our sunlight advice from Australia is a complete madness. However, as you say, and then from satellite data, we can tell how much sunlight there is where people live, because you can actually work out exactly how much sunlight falls at every postcode in Britain. So we could link up where people live to how much sunlight they'd be exposed to. So we have these two separate measures for sunlight exposure. But of course, what you have to do is you have to adjust for confounders, what are called confounders, things that might also affect your chances of living and dying, and which might be related to being a sunbed user or living further south. So there's lots of data there. So we adjusted it for things like education level, occupation, smoking, social class, health taking behavior, all the rest of it. Things that might be different between sunseekers and non-sunseekers and living further south or not. So for instance, sunseekers, sunbed users, are younger, more female, more Mancunian, more likely to smoke, less educated. Whereas living further south, again, they're younger, more female, more educated, less likely to smoke. So you adjust for all of those things. And the important thing here, so when you're looking at an effect related to your measures for sunlight exposure, using sunbeds or living further south, you're always worried that the effect you see, death or not, might be related to something you haven't measured and thought about. Not the sunbed use, not the living further south, but related to an unmeasured confounder. But what is reassuring is the way those confounders moved with the sunseekers and with living further south. They moved in different ways. So it is unlike, so it's what we call triangulation. It is unlikely that there is an unmeasured confounder leading to our effect, because what happened to people that got more sunlight, who either use sunbeds or live further south? And with both indicators, we found that the more sunlight people get, the longer they live, and quite significantly so. So sunseekers, sunbed users, over the 13 years, so it was 13 years since the end of recruitment to the UK Biobank, on average lived 50 days longer than non-sunseekers. And that was mostly due to a big reduction in cardiovascular deaths, deaths from heart disease. It was about an 18% reduction over 13 years in deaths from cardiovascular disease, but also a reduction in deaths from cancer. All cancers put together.
And is this something similar that is seen in sunny countries like, let's say, Spain, yeah, or Portugal, so, or you were talking the other countries that have a national health system? Yeah. Is that something similar that's seen in those countries?
So the study's been done in Sweden, and a similar study's been done in Sweden, and they found exactly the same thing. So this was a study called the Melanoma in Southern Sweden study, So they asked Swedes how much sunlight they got. They then went away and went to 25 years, went back. And just the same, they found that Swedes that get more sunlight have increased lifespans after adjusting for confounders, after adjusting for other things, have an increased lifespan. It's particularly due to a reduction in heart disease. So just what we have. Now, the study hasn't been done in Spain or Italy because they don't collect their data in the same way. So the reason it's been, we have shown it in Britain, we've shown it in Sweden. It might be something unique to Britain and Sweden. Maybe if you live this far north, you know, you really have to get more sunlight because we don't have much of it. Possibly. I don't know. The reason we did it here is because we can do it here, because both in Scandinavia and Britain, we have unified health records.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think so the sun seekers had a longer lifespan. And it was 50 days over that 13 years. We then went and looked at how far south you live, an entirely different, you know, approach to it. And we find just the same thing. The difference between living in Glasgow and living in Truro in terms of sunlight exposure is an increase of 26 days lifespan over 13 years. Marked reduction in heart disease, also a reduction in cancer. So however we look at it, in the UK, the more sunlight you get, the longer you live for people, you know, middle-aged people followed over 15 years. So I have problems with the standard dermatology advice to avoid sunlight. Yes, it might reduce your risks of skin aging and skin cancer, but actually what is far more important, I think, is death from any cause. And we find that the more sunlight people have, the longer they live. And the other thing, look, two other things to mention. The first one is we think these measures are very good. We measured vitamin D levels in these people. Vitamin D relies on, you have to have UV irradiation mm-hmm. to make
vitamin
sunlight,
D. Yeah, sunlight, yeah.
So measured vitamin D levels are an indicator of how much sunlight we had. And we found that the sun seekers, those who use sunbeds, sun-seeking behavior, had much higher vitamin D levels than those who didn't. So that tells us that our measure of sunlight exposure, sun seekers, sunbed users, is a good measure for sunlight exposure because these people have got higher vitamin D levels, confirming they do indeed get more sunlight exposure. And the other one was the further south you lived, dose dependently, latitude dependently, that the higher your vitamin D levels. So that's number one. So we know our measures of sun exposure are good measures of sunlight exposure because this biomarker confirms it. And the second thing is we know it's not the vitamin D causing these benefits because there have been lots of trials about giving people vitamin mm-hmm. D supplements.
Supplementation.
And it has no effect on heart disease. It has no effects on strokes. It has no effects on blood pressure. It has no effects on overall cancer mortality. Although if you've got cancer, it might extend lifespan a bit, but broadly it has minimal stroke, no effects. So it's not the vitamin D. So that's the first point I wanted to make. The second point was melanoma. So interestingly, we found that sun seekers, sunbed users, have a higher rate of being diagnosed with melanoma. And the further south you live, you have a further rate of being diagnosed with melanoma. But we found no increase in deaths from melanoma. And of course, most melanomas don't kill people. You know, most melanomas are diagnosed when they're thin, and most people with melanoma do not die of melanoma. You know, melanoma death is only a small fraction of people diagnosed with it. And while higher sunlight increases with increased diagnosis, and dermatologists have been worried about diagnoses of melanoma, I think what's more important is not dying from melanoma. And there was no increase in deaths from melanoma.
And is that because the treatments changed recently? Or yeah. Is it just better diagnosis? We've managed to get earlier?
I think it's a good question. Of course, we can't say from the data we've had. Mm-hmm. And melanoma is quite complex. So the last 10 years, you know, the checkpoint inhibitors arriving, you know, people with advanced melanoma, their outlook is hugely better than it was 10 years ago because of the new drugs we have, which it looks like are curing a significant number of people with advanced melanoma, which is fantastic. But, you know, melanoma is quite rare. And in our 300,000 people, there were only, I think, about 100 deaths from melanoma out of 300,000 people. You know, melanoma is an unusual cause of death. Far and away, the commonest cause of death in Britain is a heart attack.
Mm-hmm. I think in Glasgow, it's quite a high percentage as well.
And even higher. I mean, it's far and away the commonest cause of death, followed by stroke, followed by lung cancer. Well, what we show very clearly is sunlight has a big effect on reducing deaths from heart disease, the commonest cause of death in Britain. It has a big effect on reductions in death from stroke, the second biggest cause of death in Britain. It has a really noticeable effect on reductions in deaths from most of the cancers, including lung cancer, the third highest. So sunlight has big effects on the biggest killers.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that's also something to do with these people? You were saying, you know, they're sun seekers. Is that because they're more, you know, wanting to go outdoors, walking, exercising?
Yeah,
does that
really important, whenever you're thinking about these things, you need to be thinking about confounders. What is it that sun seekers or people, you know, people that use sunbeds or live further south might do? The confounders that you have to adjust for. And there is no magic test you can do which says, oh, it's this. You have to think to yourself, based on my experience of life, how do I think sunbed users differ? And I would recommend anybody, as I have done, to go along to a tanning studio and sit in there and have a look at the people that come in and out. Who are they? And the same thing with people head south, head down to London from Edinburgh. How do we think people live their lives differently? So absolutely, exercises are really, and of course, exercise is incredibly important. So no, one of the things we very carefully adjusted for was exercise, because exercise is hugely good for your health. And do you know, I would, so it's not the, we've adjusted for the exercise and it's not the exercise, but a really wise thing. But, you know, I would almost say, even if we hadn't adjusted for exercise, exercise is so important for your health. My concern is we have frightened people about sunshine. So you're sitting in your lunch hour on a sunny day. Shall I go outside for a walk over my lunch hour, or shall I sit inside at my computer and eat my sandwiches here? Oh, my God, sunlight's so dangerous. I better sit inside here. No! Nothing outdoes the benefits of doing exercise and not smoking. And the fact that we have frightened the public about outside is dreadful. Because, you know, even if it all turns out that the risks and benefits of sunlight balance each other out, but we have stopped people going outside, then we've done something dreadful. And I actually think the benefits of sunlight, to me, it seems pretty clear, greatly outweigh any hazards. Quite aside from the fact that exercise is also good for you. So go for a walk outside. You can't do anything better for your health.
And we're very lucky where we are, because we're right next door to the meadow. So lunch out at the meadows.
We should all be doing it. We should all be out there. And whenever I give a talk and somebody walks out halfway through, I think success. They're not leaving because they're bored by what I'm saying. They're going outside. A victory. I'm disappointed if I have a full lecture theatre at the end of a lecture.
And what do you think you envisage your next steps being after this project? So what's kind of in the future?
So what we're doing, so I think really interesting. So there's various types of research. There's epidemiology, what happens to populations. And that's what this was. I didn't look at individual people. We looked at a database of 300,000 people. We tied it up to sunlight exposure, all-cause mortality. So that is the kind of big picture stuff. The next thing is, if sunlight's good for you, which I'm absolutely certain it is, what's the mechanism? So vitamin D has been hugely overstated. Vitamin D accounts for some of the benefits of sunlight, but very few of them. There are other mechanisms. I think a far more important mechanism is this nitric oxide pathway I showed. Sunlight releases NO from the skin, dilates arteries, lowers blood pressure. I think that's much more important than vitamin D, of course, because it's my pathway. But there's also other mechanisms. And at the moment, what I'm looking at with one of my current PhD students, I've got a fantastic Jayagu, super PhD student, is we think sunlight probably has quite profound and beneficial effects on the immune system. We think it's probably anti-inflammatory. And in dermatology, we have used phototherapy, ultraviolet, to treat inflammatory skin disease for the last 30 years, and it's really good. And I have a suspicion that sunlight's effects, anti-inflammatory effects, are not just on the skin. I suspect UV is generally anti-inflammatory. It's not just a skin effect, it's a systemic effect. And we're doing experiments. So this, we're moving into our experimental season now. In winter, we take volunteers, we take blood from them, and we're about to do skin biopsies. And we look at all of their immune cells in their blood, T cells, B cells, the entire kind of autoimmune cells. And we look at all of the genes which are turned off or on in those immune cells and how those immune cells are behaving. So we do that in winter. We then give them 2 weeks of sunshine, tanning lamps, which are the closest thing there is to natural sunlight. So we give them 2 weeks of daily solar simulator, closest thing we can get to sunlight, old-fashioned tanning lamps that are a mixture of A and B. And we then repeat the bloods, and we then get in and we look at how sunlight affects immune cells, inflammation, to try and work out the mechanisms by which sunlight produces its beneficial effects on health. So that's what I'm doing. And the other thing I'm getting interested in is looking at melanoma diagnosis, because dermatologists run around saying, oh my God, most melanoma is caused by sunlight, and it isn't. So in the last 40 years, we've had a 4% year-on-year rise on the number of melanomas we diagnose in Britain for the last 25 years. So in America, there's been a six-fold rise in the number of melanomas diagnosed in the last 40 years, and it's about the same rate of rise in Britain. But there has been no appreciable change in melanoma deaths. So the number of melanomas diagnosed rocketing up. The number of melanoma deaths, I'm pleased to say, not really moving very much. Now, the official dermatology line is saying, my God, there's a melanoma epidemic out there. Thank heavens we're here catching all these melanomas and no one extra's died. That's because we're brilliant. I don't think that's true. What the data in America shows pretty clearly, and now in Denmark and in Australia, and I think in Britain, and we're looking at now, is that the harder you look for melanomas, the more you find. So when I started my dermatology career about 30 years ago, there were 300 dermatologists in Britain. There's now 1,000, three times as many dermatologists, and we diagnose three times as many melanomas. Deaths haven't changed. In America, the more biopsies are done, the more melanomas are diagnosed. Your biggest risk factor for being diagnosed with melanoma in America is coming from a rich area. There is almost no relationship between how sunny it is where you live and how much melanoma is diagnosed. I'm not talking about deaths from melanoma here. I'm talking about diagnoses of melanoma. Basically, the harder people look for melanoma, the more they find. And of course, what we're finding particularly are these thin melanomas with a very good prognosis that don't kill people. And my suspicion is that I suspect melanoma is not uncommon. And I suspect that most melanomas, if you hadn't found them, nothing would have happened. The immune system would have kept them in check. Now, once in a while, they escape immune surveillance, bang, they become thick, Breslow thickness goes up, and they can become metastatic and kill people. But I think that's an unusual event, because when I started 30 years ago, we were working just the same as now, just as hard as now, but there were far fewer of us. We were seeing far fewer people. We were diagnosing far fewer melanomas, and nothing was happening. We didn't have a mass of people dying because their melanomas hadn't been found. So I think it's classic overdiagnosis, rather like prostate cancer. You know, this huge great rage for doing PSA blood tests on men. God, half of men over the age of 60 have got prostate cancer. You would never have known if you hadn't done the blood test. Death rate remains the same. Most men with prostate cancer die with prostate cancer, not of it. And the question is, how do you find the prostate cancers that are going to kill people? And how do you find the prostate cancers that are grumbling on? And I think it's just the same with melanoma. However, we have whipped up this hysteria that there is an epidemic of melanoma. We have to see masses of people within 2 weeks. Everything else must be sacrificed on the power of finding this epidemic. There isn't an epidemic. At the same time, it's difficult because we know that if you catch a melanoma, we know that cutting melanoma out early is, you know, is what we need to do.
Yeah.
But we're not, but what we're doing now is not stopping people dying of melanoma. You know, the number of melanomas, you know, 2,000 people a year die of melanoma. That's been the same for the last 30 years. And what we're doing now is not finding people early and saving their lives. Those melanomas that are thick when we find them, and thus poor prognosis, carry on just the same. And my concern is that this, and the 90% of melanomas are caused by sunlight, is an utterly garbage figure produced by Cancer Research UK and the BAT. What they do to calculate that, so the way you work out how much of a risk factor causes a disease is you look at, so smoking and lung cancer, for instance. So it is said by the BAD and Cancer Research UK that sunlight is more dangerous than smoking. They say 90% of melanoma is caused by sunlight and only 83% of lung cancer is caused by smoking. I mean, that's clearly that's garbage. You know, sunlight is not more dangerous than smoking, and anyone who thinks that really should get out a bit more. But that is the official line. So what they do is they look to calculate this, is they look at the relative risk of being diagnosed with lung cancer in smokers as against non-smokers. And if you smoke, you're 9 times more likely to be diagnosed with lung cancer. And you then look at how many people smoke, and it's 23% of the population. And you feed those numbers into a formula, and out comes 83% of lung cancer could be stopped if people stop smoking. And that's true. And the reason that's true is we know how much smoking increases your risk of dying, of getting lung cancer, because we got really good data on that. And I'm afraid to say that a diagnosis of lung cancer 90% of the time leads to a death from lung cancer. You know, a diagnosis of lung cancer is a genuine thing. So we got that bit of data is correct. And the other thing is we know how many people smoke. You know, we know how many cigarettes are sold. You know, the Treasury says this many, we've got this much tax in from cigarette sales in Britain. So we know how many cigarettes. So you've got really hard data that feeds into the 83%. Now, melanoma is entirely different. First of all, there is almost no relationship between a diagnosis of melanoma and death from melanoma. Your biggest risk factor for being diagnosed with melanoma in America is how rich you are. And in Britain is how undeprived you are. So you are much more likely to be diagnosed with melanoma if you're on the least deprived quintile. So if you're on a good job, you've been to university, got a good income, you are much more likely to be diagnosed with melanoma than if you've not been to university or unemployed, all the rest of it. So it's all down to how hard you look for it. So, and very few people diagnosed with melanoma die of it. There is the relationship between a diagnosis of melanoma and death from melanoma is very poor. They're kind of separate diseases almost. You know, sunburn's a risk factor for melanoma, dying of it. So first of all, that measures. And secondly, who are the unexposed population? We've got smokers and non-smokers. What do we do for that? So what they do is they go back to the earliest birth cohort they can find. So in Britain, it's 1918 Thames. In France, it's 1903 Paris. In Ontario, it's 1942 Ontario. In the United States, in Denmark. So you go back to the earliest both cohort you can find. And you say, no evidence, you just say they had the perfect amount of sun exposure. Zero evidence, you just state it. They had the perfect amount of an utter invention. So 1918 Thames, the one we use in Britain, this is no electricity, no indoor lighting, no screens, no televisions. So we say that they just sat indoors knitting in the dark, presumably. Of course they didn't. They were playing outside. Kids, I spend my life trying to get my bloody son off his Xbox and to play outside. Will he do it? Not at all. And that's the same for every child in Britain. I spend my life sitting inside working in my office. Far fewer people worked indoors in 1918. There were no screens. They went outdoors. But we say the perfect, I mean, an utter invention. You then compare not melanoma deaths, because the number of deaths from melanoma has not changed. It's 2,000 a year, year in, year out, for the last since records began. You look at diagnoses of melanoma. So there's been a sixfold rise in diagnoses of melanoma in the last 40 years, not because there's a genuine rise in melanoma, but because we're looking for it harder. So we then say there's six times as much melanoma now compared to people born in 1918. You feed in the whole population, six times rise into the formula and out pops 90%. It's a complete fiction. It is garbage. It is BS. It is meaningless. I've just had a paper in the, a short communication in the BJD, actually just out this month in the, if people Google it, when I bring this up. And one of the reviewers said, oh, it has to be true because everybody does this. No, everybody does the same thing. You know, 1918, you know, France 1903, they're doing the same thing repeatedly. You know, repeating a lie multiple times, a garbage, meaningless analysis, doesn't turn it into magic data. It remains garbage. You know, the plural of fairy story is not data, it's Grimm's Book of Fairy Stories. So I've got a real thing with this. This complete fiction put out by BAT and Cancer Research UK that 90% of melanoma could be prevented by sunlight avoidance. No, it can't. It's an invention. And sunlight has huge health benefits. Sunlight in Britain, sunlight in Scandinavia makes people live longer. And we are trying to keep them out of the sun. It is dreadful. So I'm sorry to get
passionate
about this, but this is, we are creating a problem here.
I think sometimes people can reasonably be a little bit, you know, you hear the word cancer and it does sound very scary. Yeah. For the patients that you've recruited into your study, I take it that the patients you recruited, they were the sun seeker kind of group of people
The
study?
So the patients I recruit to my sunlight studies in winter, they're predominantly students, colleagues. Well, actually, I have to say half of them are professors. I say, we're doing a study, we take some blood, we give you 2 weeks of a sun lamp, we take some more blood. And, you know, so I had patient information sheet has to be understandable. Half of them are profs. Anyway, so I had this stream of professors, colleagues, students. So because it's really interesting stuff, because, you know, the data is doing what we were doing goes along with people living longer. So, this is not a. Yeah.
And for your research and things like that, for the recent paper that you did with the biobank and the one that you're going to release, where do people find that? How do they is it online? Yep.
So the UK Biobank is published in a paper, it's a geographer's journal called, what I would do is I would even go to, can we put up links, Molly, to this?
I can, links.
Can we let's add some links to this and people can have a look at them. Because I think this is a really important, it's a really important matter. And look, and I think we in dermatology, you know, so it's absolutely up there for people, and I want this to be discussed. Okay, this is now, I realize there is an opposing point of view, but I think we need to be discussing this, because I have two concerns. So at the moment, look, we don't want people to die of melanoma, okay? That, dermatologist, I do not want people to die of melanoma. And our the idea that we work on at the moment is that sunlight hits the skin, it mutates DNA in a melanocyte, it becomes a melanoma, it becomes a thin melanoma, it becomes a thick melanoma, it metastasizes, it kills you. So we've got the idea that there's this gradual spread along there. And so we do three things to try and stop people dying of melanoma. Number one, prevention. We say, right, avoid the sun. Now, that's worked really well for things like cervical cancer. You know, HPV vaccine, amazing. You know, we are going to eradicate cervical cancer. You know, really, you know, we're going to eradicate cervical cancer by prevention. In the same way that stomach cancer deaths are going right down, deaths from stomach cancer are going down, and that's because we now treat H. pylori. You know, we used to give them antacids, we now give them antibiotics. H. pylori, reduce the ulcers, use cancer. Fantastic. Prevention works there. Sun avoidance is doing, I don't think, people show graphs and say, look at this, there's a little wiggle on the line here, maybe it's related. Look, you stop somebody smoking, you don't look for wiggles, you look for a halving of deaths from lung cancer, and that is what you get. You don't look for wiggles in cervical cancer deaths, you look for a halving, and you, that's what you get. That's what prevention does. And all of this, oh, the line here, it might be, I just don't buy that. So first of all, I don't think it's doing much for it. It is sunburn, which is the risk factor for melanoma, not sunlight. And secondly, that sunlight avoidance is having huge damage because melanoma is a small, small, small print cause of death. The big causes of death, heart attacks, stroke, you know, the other cancers, are reduced by sunlight exposure. And are we really to make all of those deaths go up to make us who rank down? I think melanoma is the fifth, it's the 30th or the 50th. It's right down on the bottom. It's in about 50th place for causes of death in Britain. It really doesn't register effectively. It is such a small thing. And yet here we are in going in with an intervention that raises deaths from the big killers. God. So number one, pointless. And doing damage to general health. And that's our advice. You know, you don't say to psychiatrists, can you advise the public on smoking? Oh, it's a wonderful relaxant. It's an anxiolytic. People feel so much better mentally after smoking. It kills people, you know. So you don't ask psychiatrists to give advice on the effects of smoking on mood. It kills people, for God's sake. Don't smoke. So sadly, dermatologists are behaving anyway, I think, wrongly. So first of all, sunlight wants nothing. Secondly, the it's almost, we try to catch it early. You know, we have 2-week weight clinics, we have USOX. And the problem with that is we are rushing at these, the more and more and more we look for these melanomas, the more we find. Is it having an effect on people dying from melanoma? Well, we have 2,000 deaths a year from melanoma, despite this enormous increased activity. It is not like, you know, screening for bowel cancer works. When you turn 50 in Scotland, you get that little package through the post, a parcel, how exciting. Not my favourite present of the birthday.
I don't think and many yet, people
and yet, and yet, maybe the best one, because actually screening for bowel cancer, catching bowel cancer early, there's been no change in incidence, in number of cases of bowel cancer in the last 40 years, but the deaths are going down. And the deaths are going down because bowel cancer genuinely follows, you know, a regular and inevitable progress. You start with a small one, it becomes a bigger one, it metastasizes, and it's a steady and inevitable progress. And if you interrupt it, that pathway, people stop dying because, you know, it's a real thing. Now, that's not happening with melanoma, because it turns out our means for diagnosing melanoma, seeing people and saying, could it be a melanoma, and doing a biopsy, we're just finding lots and lots and lots of extra stuff, but probably most of it wouldn't have killed them. And it has the effect, it has completely taken over our service. That is all we do now. We don't see acne, we don't see eczema, we don't see psoriasis, we don't see rosacea. We just see huge amounts of things. Now, if that was stopping people dying of melanoma, fantastic. I do not see that in the data. And the rest of the service has collapsed. And the third thing we do for melanoma is when people have got advanced melanoma, we use these new checkpoint inhibitors, and that is working. That is amazing. It's having a fantastic effect. And what I would say is really interesting about that, these checkpoint inhibitor drugs that are so effective for advanced melanoma, they turn the immune system back on. So the Nobel Prize for Medicine, in whenever it was 3 years ago, discovering checkpoint inhibitors, was realizing that some cancers like melanoma turn the immune system off. The checkpoints, they increase the checkpoints. And the checkpoint inhibitor drugs come back and turn off the inhibition, you know, two negatives make a positive. They turn the immune system back on. And lo and behold, when you turn the immune system back on, and if the patients tolerate the drugs, you actually cure advanced melanoma in about a third of cases. So it tells you the importance of the immune system on controlling melanoma. And my suspicion is, you know, and the fact that the harder you look, the more thin early melanomas you find, I suspect that there's probably lots of them, and the immune system keeps them under control. And occasionally, and the key thing is, why occasionally does the immune system stop controlling the melanoma? Bang, it comes through, and those are the ones that kill you. And yeah, so we're getting in this. I've got a student about to start.
Sorry.
And we're going to be getting in. We're going to be getting in looking for this any sign for whether there's over,
like,
you know, an overdiagnosis of melanoma, because at the moment we've had a tripling of the dermatology workforce, and the service we offer is worse in terms of the waiting lists are longer than they were. We've not had an effect on stopping people dying from melanoma except for the new checkpoint inhibitors. We've tripled the workforce. So we've got it. So, you know, I think just saying let's do more and more of the same. No, I think we need to stop and look at what we're doing and rethink it. And I think we're doing lots of things wrong. Not a popular message. Not one that dermatologists want to hear, but I think it's one, you know, the army has a phrase. My father was a soldier. The army has a phrase, reinforcing failure. So day one of the Somme, 30,000 guys over the top, 30,000 guys mowed down by machine guns. So day two, you send another 30, and day three, and you end up with 100,000 dead and nothing has changed. And the army learned from that. And what it now does, it does not reinforce failure. If something's not working, you stop and think and say, can we do something else? And I'm afraid to say, I think we are reinforcing failure. We're saying, let's get more dermatologists. Let's get more two-week lists. It's not making any difference. And it's destroying everything else. And let's have more sunlight avoidance. You know, I think we're day one of the Somme, day two, day three, day four of the Somme, doing nothing different. Just throwing more and more resources in the same way. And we have to rethink it.
And for your project of when you've recruited the new kind of recruiters that you're going to be doing these biopsies and tests on, when do you expect that to be published and available?
That will take a while. It's genetic. We get shed loads. So what we do is we do our experiments in winter. And of course, you now get back unbelievable amounts of data with these the new pathways of doing it. So we do our experiments for, they take 2 or 3 weeks to do the experiments, and we then spend a year crunching the data.
Okay. So you've got your PhD
and then you have to write a PhD,
in the background, I mean, just crunching away.
And so winter is our experimental season.
Okay.
And then summer we spend, you know, crunching those numbers.
Well, hopefully you'll get some good data, interesting data out of that. And we'll maybe speak about it when you've eventually garnered all the data again. Thank you so much for coming and talking about your kind of interest in sunlight and in skin health. And maybe speak again soon.
Molly would love to. We'd love to. Okay.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For further information on the BDNG, visit our website, bdng.org.uk, and watch out for the next BDNG podcast, which is coming soon.